Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori, and it is my honor to be talking to the former CEO and founder of Coeur d'Alene Casino Resort, Dave Matheson. Dave, I'm so glad you came into the cultural exhibition by chance, and your words really were very heartwarming, and I really want to try to get a sense of where we are and what this is all about. So thanks so much for coming on the show.
Glad to be here. I enjoy people. I think we are all children of the same creator and the Mother Earth. We need to learn how to be good neighbors.
Definitely. Your words are very inspiring. Talk a little bit about the resort here, the casino, and how it all got started.
Well, I think we were fighting poverty since before my time on Earth, and 75% to 90% unemployment, and trying to raise our children with a semblance of hope that you could have an opportunity and be something, whatever you wanted to work for. You're empowered to make your own future. And we knew it wasn't totally true. If you had to move away to do something you wanted to do, what were you giving up and who are you really? And who would you become? So a lot of our young people didn't buy into that. So we had to find a way to create jobs, our own economy, and become empowered physically, materially, mentally, and spiritually to do what we set our minds to in the modern world.
And I just want to mention also that you are an elder with the tribe and on the council, mm-hmm. correct? And talk about your role with that.
Yeah, the tribal council is a governing body for the tribe. So they make the decisions about what they're going to do, what they're going to invest in, what the laws are, the courts, the programs, social services, the police enforcement actions, and the natural resources all go through the tribal council for our attention and priority action and protection. So it's a good responsibility, normally reserved for the elders, but in the modern era, it's subject to election like any other government in America.
What was it like growing up as a member of the Coeur d'Alene tribe?
Well, you know, I have to say, we didn't know any different. I guess the lake and the shade by the lake is our air conditioning, and the water is our life. It's the life of all of us. We've always been told that, and the land is here where the great creator put us, a native nation he created. He gave a separate language. He allowed a separate culture to grow, and how we could address him and our living of life. And so it was, in a way, wonderful. My parents never had, and grandparents never had, running water or electricity until I was probably a teenager. And we didn't know we were missing anything. We had fire in our wood stove, and they'd go hunting and fishing and have a garden and go gather berries and roots and fruit and things and make sure we had school clothes and somehow get by. And I don't know that, I guess you could say modern society is more comfortable, but I can't say that we're all just better because we have more and it's easier. We'd all rather have it easier than harder, but there's nothing wrong with hard work, and that's what I remember. People with deep faith working very hard and never, ever giving up, no matter what.
Absolutely. And my have times changed, right? Yep. Really, so different. What has been the biggest change within the tribe since you were young?
Well, I think it has changed in many ways. Like every generation of the larger society becomes their own identity and what they focus on as a priority. And I'd say growing up, it became education. We got to send everybody to get an education, like the young people. And we did, but there wasn't any work for you want to be a doctor or an engineer or a scientist or even a person in any other medical industry, whatever. There were no jobs here for it. So now there are jobs available. We've got first-class health care. We've got the education department. And I would say people get to really live their dream, but not to the degree that where I think everybody is included. So we have more work to do to make sure all the young people coming up can have a professional life if they want to, and a traditional life as well. and enjoy life through them both.
It must make you extremely satisfied, though, to see, you know, how you led this resort, casino, and the golf course, which I want to talk about as well. And, you know, there are more jobs for members of your tribe, right? And you have come a long way.
Yeah, I think, and then my grandchildren, they, it's all about high tech and how do we, what's the password for the Wi-Fi? And and they're learning things and being influenced by things that maybe not are all good. I mean, we can all see that not everything that people see on their screens are helpful or healthy or right. And we don't want people to become so foolishly self-indulgent that they come to a point where they might hurt themselves or hold their own self back. But know that life is also about, well, my grandparents used to say that there's nothing you can't do with a little bit of faith and lots of hard work. And I don't think that's going to change, whether we have technology or higher education or people foolish and self-indulgent or not. It will always be that way. We just have to make sure they never, ever forget.
That's a good point. Having, you know, being a hard worker and having an incredible work ethic, no matter how modern we are with technology and everything else, is just the key. How difficult was it to get the resort casino built here?
Well, that is a good example, I guess, of the little bit of faith and hard work. Three governors told me in Idaho that they're never going to allow casino gaming in Idaho by a tribe or anybody else. And I kind of maybe add to the story a little bit by saying three governors said, over my dead body, there'll be Indian gaming in Idaho. May they rest in peace. We took it to the people of Idaho in an initiative, and I got to lead that with a PR company to get signatures and get on the ballot and go around the state arguing and debating the opponents to try to bring it before the public view. And nearly 6% of Idaho voted in favor of an agreement with Coeur d'Alene tribe and any tribe in Idaho to do casino gaming in Idaho, according to the terms of what we had put together. So it was a lot of work and a long fight that just wouldn't end. And we could see that we could be there another 10 years. We would never get Indian gaming unless we found another way to go about it. And so here it is, a hotel, a casino, and concerts and events and the cultural demonstration exhibition that we just came from. Hotels are full. The restaurants are full usually. And we think people are happy. And I learned to really like managing a casino because it's just all about making people happy. And you can't always make people happy. And people let you know about it when they gamble too much and you didn't let them win. You can't let anybody win, obviously. But you learn to deal with people. And I think that makes us all better human beings in our own right to try to understand more and more of each other.
So just going back, because I just want to understand. So it started in 1993, but when did the idea actually originate? And how long, just to give us an idea of how long it did take for this to become reality?
I think I wrote the feasibility study and the market study in 1989, and I went to Washington, D.C. I ran the Bureau of Indian Affairs and some other departments or functions in Department of Interior in Washington, D.C. When I came back, the tribe wanted to go ahead and embark on this journey and build the gaming facility. We knew we could do a bingo hall, but even the state challenged the bingo hall. There was a fight all the way. That we probably just shouldn't have anything at all. And we just stood up to it. Maybe we can't, but my grandpa would say, you won't fight with the war club and the knife and the spear and the gun anymore, but you're going to fight with the word and with the pen and with the spoken belief about what we really are, where we really come from, what it's really all about. So I tried to take that to heart. And I think if they were here today, they would say, we did good.
Oh, absolutely. You did good. We're here on a golf media trip, so I have to talk about Circling Raven, which I just love, mostly the expansiveness of the land. It is on over 600 acres, and there are no homes. There's no housing development there, which is so rare in golf. It's just so refreshing to be on a golf course where it's all natural beauty. I was looking for a moose, could not find one, but I understand that they're out there. Plenty, but talk a little bit about how the golf course got started.
Well, we always knew that a golf course and a casino resort kind of go together. You can fill the golf course, fill the hotel rooms. People want something to do at night. They go together very well. And we offered an RFP, request for proposals, from some of the golf design companies and construction companies to make us a bid about how they could build a golf course here. We had two sites that they looked at, and most everybody told us you shouldn't build it where it's at. That's kind of like a national park. It's beauty and its grandeur and majesty. And so the chairman and I walked through it again. We thought, well, this is our country. It's kind of like, it's all beautiful. It's all majestic and wonderful. And we thought, it's got the wetland in the middle, and then the trees and forests and open meadows, and then the farmland around it and the mountains around that. And I went to look at some of the famous golf courses in the West Coast and California and Florida. And I tried to understand what is the mystique that they can get to charge the fees that they do and master the kind of interest they get and adoration from golfers. And I looked at ours and I thought, I think the opportunity here is nature. So if we don't build any homes, no condos, we don't over-commercialize it. I have pictures of elk, deer, and eagles, trees, and hawks, and it's a beautiful place and a natural experience you can't get at any other golf course. So I think it's become very well known for that fact.
It absolutely is. The terrain is so varied and beautiful, and the variety. And then when the wind picks up, it's very difficult. It can be very challenging. Are you a golfer yourself?
I learned to golf so I could build that course. After we built it, I gave it up just because I had to. It takes a lot of time to golf. But I learned to play, and the chairman and I wanted to be the first ones to play. So the day that the greenskeepers gave the go-ahead, we'll pick an opening date, and you can go ahead and play, and the chairman can go and play. We went over there. I made it around maybe four holes, had to come back and buy more golf balls. So it's a very challenging course. A resort course, you can just, kind of hit it into the other fairway and then wave at people, hit it back in and keep going. This one, you go off our fairway, it's gone. You take your stroke, take another shot, and take the hit. So it's a real course. So when I won't say I'm a professional golfer, near that. When your score grows from the 70s to maybe upper 80s and low 90s, just because it's a real course, it's real golf.
It definitely is. I mean, if you lose a ball in the high fescue, it's very, slim chance of finding that ball for sure. The Symetra Tour is going to be here in August, the feeding tour into the LPGA. So that's a huge event, and I understand it's going to be here for the next 3 years. So congratulations on getting the Symetra Tour tournament.
Yeah, we've had some big groups here, NFL groups and big tournaments. And people from down south and over back east and around the world are coming here to play golf. And they all say the same thing. They've never seen anything like it. And I think the lady pro golfers will love it too.
They certainly will. I'm excited to get their reaction when they come and play here and have that opportunity. So this evening we experience the cultural exhibition with men and women and young people in the costume from years ago. What does it mean to you when you see those kinds of things?
I think in our native way, I mean, the feelings, expressions you can't put into words, we can sing them and we can dance them. And our oneness with the earth and our maybe thankfulness for our parents and grandparents, our families and folks, for our culture and tradition and to maybe with the attitude, find some place where maybe our ancestors felt what they sang and danced and kind of enjoy that. And the sun flickering off the lake and like to the beat of a drum almost into a dance. And we can still find great strength, power is a difficult word to define and use, but a power and a strength and all that kind of maintains us like a rudder in life, where we know the Creator promised no one a tomorrow, promised no one an easy time, but while we're here, by God, we can shake hands, be one altogether, and enjoy life.
That's such a great message, such a universal message that needs to be heard more and more. What's your role with the tribe now? Give us an idea of you know, what do you do on a daily basis, and you know, what maybe your goals are for the future.
I do all the development analysis and work for the tribe for new businesses. We want to diversify, get into more things and more professional opportunity for young people who are going to high school and college now. So when they get out, they can work in the profession of their choice. And I think that's very, very important. So I spend all my time in that. We have three or four new ones that I'd like to put together, and hopefully I can. And I'll be 70 years old here coming up, and I want to do something that leaves something special here for the people that they can enjoy, that I can enjoy, whatever the forever world is.
My last question, sir, what has been, not a secret to your success, but what has maybe been the reason for your successes?
I think there's a divine inspiration, a divine intervention. If the native tribes can grab the bull by the horns, overcome all the hardships that have been piled on them, and with independence and a spirit of maybe never ever give up, I think there's nothing that we can't do even now. And it seemed like everything that I did was here was blessed. It was ordained that it could be, but I'm not going to get it on a silver platter. It's going to take a lot of hard work. And so the new projects that I'm doing are like that too. I think the good things are going to happen for us. We just have to keep going.
What does America need to do now at this point to reach any of your objectives?
Well, America, we always felt, we know that no group or types of people have been treated rougher or wronger or whatever you want to call it, than Native people. We were told this is your land forever, Indian land forever, and your rights to live here and live your way. And then before the ink got dry, start taking things away. Now we own, we're the minority owners of land on our own reservation. All we need is to be given a chance to just let us go and excel on our own. Don't get in the way anymore. But no other group of people on a percentage or per capita basis has gone to fight for this country more than Native people. My father, 3 years in World War II, the front lines on the Pacific Islands. And because we knew that freedom and justice for all touches everybody, including our people, and those of the world that don't have it know that it's a sacred miracle that they don't have, but only can wish that they do. So I think if America would just give us a chance to thrive on our own, we will thrive, we will prosper, and we will do right for our place in America.
Thanks so much for joining me. It's truly an honor.
Thank you very much.